Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hijinks and Hot Flashes by Kira Blackwood. Narrated by Tracy Odom. Chapter 1. Long, blue fingers inched their way up the checkerboard cloth and over the edge of the table. The young woman working the farmer's market stand didn't seem to notice, but I certainly did.
"Have you decided what you're going to do with them yet?"
she asked with a flip of her long hair. In the glow of the setting sun, the black strands sparkled like obsidian. Before waiting for me to answer, she continued,
"If you haven't, I'd recommend sauce for the Golden Delicious. Stamen and Rome Beauty are exceptional in pies."
Fernando used his bony appendage to probe the tabletop, tapping along the red and white squares as he searched for a snack. He found one of the bins and walked his fingers up to the base of a pyramid of stacked apples.
"Or, if you're feeling adventurous..."
The young woman leaned forward and looked around conspiratorially before squinching her lineless face in a beaming smile.
"You could mix them all together in a crumble."
She froze like that, waiting for me to respond. I said, and took a step to the right, knocking Fernando's wrist with my cane. He hissed and grumbled beside me. In response to the noise, the apple woman lifted onto tiptoes and peered over the table. I moved a hand into her line of sight and said, "The apples would pair perfectly with mulberries." Her eyes went as bright as her grin.
"Yes, a million times yes. Blackberries and mulberries, or even some strawberries added to that crumble. Now I'm hungry. You have to come back here and tell me how it goes."
"I'll bring you a bowl."
"You are the sweetest," she said.
Having successfully diverted her attention, I met her smile with one of my own. Fernando growled and pulled on his leash. His collar rose up into the middle of his giant eye again, and the furry dog ear headband on top of his head slipped backward. The snotty snorting sounds he was making suggested he was an animal more than his costume did. I paid, took my bag, and turned to hurry away before he threw a disguise-blowing conniption. Again. The last thing we needed was a repeat of last week. When pulling the leash didn't satisfy him, Fernando pushed his collar upward. As his body was basically a squishy globe and it was attached a few inches below his equator, he would have had more success pushing down instead of up. I turned to go, tilted my chin toward him, and whispered, "If you keep this up, you'll have to stay home next time." He stopped pulling on the leash and fussing with his collar and looked up at me with a quivering lip. I pulled a Golden Delicious out of my bag and handed it to him. He tossed the whole thing, core, stem, and all, into his mouth and swallowed. As soon as it was gone, he pawed at my bag for more. He made a gurgling sound that meant, "Still hungry. Need now." "Wait until we get back to the cart," I told him. Each step shot a fresh jolt of pain up from my heel into my hip. I ignored the discomfort and kept walking. In my purse, a jar of Lumios waited for when the sharpness became too severe to withstand. For now, I was coping. If I could avoid it, I didn't use my powers. Life was too precious to waste. Once we returned to the parking lot, we'd drive Fernando's tiny four-wheeler and cart home from the farmer's market. I'd have a few minutes to take a rest and put my aching feet up before it was time to meet my coven at Robertini's for an after-hours celebration of our latest victory. A little farther and we'd know Fernando's dog costume had been a success, unlike last week's failure to pass him off as a small child. Non-magical people saw what they expected to see. Ignorance was a snuggly blanket, protecting them from a world they wanted to know nothing about. If nothing outside of their worldview had directly interfered with their lives personally, they saw nothing that might upset that illusion of normality. Dressed a blue sphere with a giant eyeball in the center of his face and a pair of overalls and a wig, he passed as a human child. At least that's how it had started last week at the market. That was until one of the vendors had tried to offer him a free cookie. In his enthusiastic acceptance, Fernando had bitten a chunk out of her finger. Quite a ruckus had ensued. I'd needed to heal her so she didn't lose use of the digit, but had to leave teeth marks so she could rationalize the experience in a way that seemed ordinary to her. The recovery was a success. Still, judgmental looks were directed our way after that, and the little boy costume was retired. Honestly, I was a little surprised we received such a warm welcome at the market this evening. To be safe, we stayed as far from the cookie stall as possible. If Fernando had wanted to wait at home or in the cart, he wouldn't have needed a disguise at all. No one would have noticed him. But he wanted attention, to be a part of the world outside of our safe little forest bubble. I was trying.
Puppy!
A pint-sized ball of energy barreled toward us from the side. Fernando said in his garbled way,
No, thank you.
He stepped behind me, shielding himself from view with my skirt. The toddler ran like a linebacker and felt like one as she slammed her shoulder into my calf.
Lily!
A man called after the girl. Oh, the air left my lungs as the pain in my legs swelled outward. Lily was my daughter's name, too. The girl squirmed between my legs.
I'm so sorry, ma'am.
The man hurried over and circled around me to scoop up his little girl. You can't go running off like that, Lily, and you can't pet a dog without asking first. The little girl turned her big brown eyes at me.
Can I please pet your puppy? Pretty please with gummy bears on top?
I looked down at Fernando. He was a blue ball with a unibrow as thick as my arm and long arms, yet almost no legs. His frown showed row after row of sharp teeth. He waggled his finger in a gesture of no.
It touched me. I bite off hand.
He's a grumpy dog, I told the child. Best not to pet him. Tears rolled down her cheeks as she burst out in a deafening wail. Her father made an apologetic frown and tried to calm the child as she thrashed in his arms. Fernando and I took the opportunity to make our escape. Fernando offered to drive. What would people think if they saw a dog behind the wheel of a tiny four-wheeler? I insisted it be me, and immediately regretted it when I had to squish myself up to fit on the seat that was intended for a small child. On the way home, I couldn't help but think about the little girl's energy, and how that enthusiasm to explore reminded me of my own Lily. When I closed my eyes, I could still see her round 5-year-old face, eyes filled with mischief, and a grin to match as she chased Fernando by the river. She was the only child he had ever allowed to touch him. I could feel her in my arms when she skinned her knee, and her face was beet red because she held her breath, refusing to let even a single tear fall. I could see the stubborn set in her jaw when I tried to stop her from joining the library. 70 years had passed since I lost her, and I still couldn't enjoy fond memories of my daughter without stirring the crippling pain in my heart at knowing I should have done more to protect her. Even though the drive was short, by the time we reached the magic shop, my hands and wrists ached so badly I wasn't sure I would be able to use them the rest of the day. My legs were cramped from having to fit on the too small vehicle. I should have ridden in the cart and let Fernando drive the tiny four-wheeler back. I could feel the life energy of the Lumio in my purse. It was a gentle ping, a reminder that magic could heal me if I so chose. As soon as I made it inside, I dropped my purse and the apple bag on the table and went straight for the pain medicine. Fernando opened the bottle for me and poured me a glass of water. I thanked him, took the pills, and lay down in bed in my little room at the back of the magic shop. I closed my eyes and willed myself to relax while I waited for the medicine to do its job. Not a minute had passed before I heard a rustling sound from out in the shop. There was snorting next, and a wet crunch. Fernando, I said, are you sneaking apples? Silence. We're supposed to make a crumble for the girls, remember? Supposed to was strong wording. I had bought the fruit to make something for the coven celebratory gathering after hours at Robertini's later tonight. Bringing something wasn't required, but I preferred to do so. I would get up and bake as soon as the pain abated. There was no way to cut apples when my fingers hurt too much to do what I told them to do. Fernando didn't respond. My eyelids grew heavy, and I told myself I'd take 10 minutes or so and then I'd feel better. Noises resumed in the other room,
but they felt distant and unimportant as I drifted off. My beeping alarm pulled me from my nap. It couldn't be time to go meet the girls already, could it? I'd slept too long. There wasn't time to bake now, and even if there had been, I couldn't quite get my fingers to completely straighten. I couldn't have managed it anyway. I sighed my frustration and climbed out of bed. "Fernando," I called, "it's time to get going." I couldn't hear him rolling around on the floorboards, so it was possible he wasn't in the building. Fernando came and went as he pleased, though he rarely missed chores and appointments. Using my cane to steady me, I grabbed my purse and the apple bag, and immediately noticed the load was too light. I peered into the apple bag and found it completely empty. Fernando must have eaten all 24 of them while I'd rested. Aching pain in my jaw alerted me to the fact that I was grinding my teeth. I took a breath and reminded myself that although he could cause trouble now and again, he was my oldest friend, the only one still with me from my life before Marshmallow. I swapped the empty bag for a bottle of sherry, put on a coat, and headed outside. Fernando was sitting on the four-wheeler waiting for me.
"I drive,"
he said in his gurgly way. "I'd appreciate that," I told him. As stiff as I was, there was no way I could handle driving. I climbed into the cart and watched the scenery pass. Buildings quickly replaced forest. Chrysanthemums, straw, and pumpkins decorated window displays in the shops, and foam tombstones and witchy inflatables popped up in yards. The cold air nipped at my face. To combat the shivers and hold in body heat, I crossed my arms. Before long, we arrived at Robertini's. Light poured out through the windows, half as bright as it would have been had the restaurant been open. I climbed out of the cart, bottle of sherry in my hand, and made my way to the door. I tried to make my fingers work, but they refused. I couldn't open the door. I peered down into my bag, to the jar with the glowing slug inside. Life energy swirled around the brainless creature. I'd put this off as long as I could. If I was going to function, I needed to use my power. Just a quick pluck, like tugging on a loose thread, and the life force was mine. It was just enough healing to allow my arthritic hand to open the door. It carried me inside. A messy head of red hair and the head of straight golden locks immediately suggested Remedy and Jennifer were sitting with their backs to me in one of the booths. Across the table, brimming with food, was Brianna. Given the victory we were here to celebrate was hers, she didn't seem to be taking part in the conversation. Her hazel eyes were glassed over as Remedy and Jennifer chatted, and a V formed between her black brows. As soon as she spotted me, a small smile curved up the corner of her lips. She popped out of her seat and met me halfway through the dining room. "Hey, Molly, I'm glad you could make it." "Me too." The door opened. I turned around, expecting Fernando. The overhead lights hummed in the sudden silence of the restaurant's dining room, or maybe the sound existed only inside my ears. My heart thudded against my ribs. Remedy and Jennifer stopped talking in the booth behind me. All attention turned to the woman who entered from the dark night. In a flared skirt, tailored blouse, and white gloves, she appeared to have stepped right out of the 1950s. It was the same shirt and skirt she'd worn the day she died. It was the same outfit and hairstyle that had been frozen with her essence in crystal. Standing in front of me was my daughter, Lily. 70 years ago, I'd watched her die. She searched my face with her doe eyes. I didn't blink. I didn't breathe. I didn't dare move. This couldn't be real. I had to be dreaming. Flashes of vulnerability, of muddled emotion, morphed Lily's expression. She twined her fingers in front of her and twisted them together. "Mom?" Chapter 2. In both the most devastating and grandest moments of my life, time had a way of standing still. I wasn't sure which this was. It was either the best night of my life, if what I was seeing was actually true, or the cruelest of illusions. Jennifer and Remedy whispered to each other. I stood in place, stunned. "Did she say Mom?" Jennifer asked. "I think that woman just called Molly Mom."
"She did," Remedy said. Hope had crept into my system time and again over the years, every time I'd found evidence that she might be out there, only to be crushed by a fresh round of devastation. After so much heartbreak, so much sorrow, I couldn't accept a truth that stood so clearly in front of my eyes. The truth that Lily was alive. I told myself she wasn't real, that this was some kind of torturous trick from the universe. The woman before me was an illusion, a fake. If I could believe that, it wouldn't hurt as much when she was still really gone. Those self-protective thoughts couldn't stop my heart from clenching or my tears from rolling down my cheeks. I ran to her, or as close an approximation to running as my ancient body would allow. Her face was pink from the cold. Her bright eyes glossed over as she knitted her brows together.
"Is it really you?" she asked. "You're so old."
A burst of laughter escaped me as I wrapped my arms around her and squeezed. She was stiff at first, completely uncomfortable with the sudden embrace. Then she melted against me and squeezed me back just as fiercely. I could feel it from my nose to my toes. She really was my Lily. I released a breath of relief, still unsure how this could be happening, but unwilling to let go of my daughter for even a second for fear she'd disappear again. I lowered my palms down her arms and took her hands in mine. The fingers of her white gloves were stained brown. It wasn't only her gloves that were stained. Brown smudges were slathered across her green skirt and speckled across her white blouse. A leaf stuck out of the large curl of red hair on top of her head.
"She looks like you, Remedy," Jennifer whispered. "Like she's your time-traveling cousin."
"With fancier style," Remedy whispered back.
"I don't know what's happening," Lily said.
She shot a glance over my shoulder to Brianna, who was standing behind me, then to Jennifer and Remedy, who were watching us from their seat at the table. Lily pulled her hands from mine.
"Can we talk?
Alone, preferably."
"Of course." I started toward the door, using my cane to help steady me.
"Wait."
Brianna hurried to the table, then back to me, with a box in her arms. She held it out to me, a warm grin across her face. She whispered,
"I'm so happy for you."
"Thank you." I took the box and squeezed her hand as I accepted. By the sweet, nutty scent, I would guess the contents to be a pecan pie, my favorite. It was surely intended to be shared during the celebratory gathering I was leaving minutes after I'd arrived. If Brianna was disappointed that I wasn't going to stay for her party, she didn't show it. She was a kind person, and I was lucky to call her my friend. With a few long strides, Lily opened the door for me, and we stepped outside together. The bulbs above the Robertini sign lit the sidewalk, and a soft glow carried out through the windows. The night was quiet and full of possibilities, none as charged as the nervous energy between Lily and me. Where had she been all of this time? Why was there dirt on her clothes? Had she been in stasis with the Shachacha under Marshmallow all along? How had I not known? How would I let myself give up on finding her for even a second? My unasked questions pinged in the back of my skull. My emotions were an ever-changing ball in my gut. A cold gust of wind bit right through my coat and seeped into my bones. Lily appeared unaffected, even with half of her arms and legs bare to the autumn air.
"How long has it been?" Lily asked.
"Too long. 70 years. All that time ago, she'd been on a job for the library. I hadn't known she was in town until one night I'd been collecting Lumios. She called out to me, drawing my attention from my task. I'd followed the sound of her voice down a tunnel where I saw the Shachacha break her neck. I saw her die, felt it in my bones. It was the most horrible feeling, like my insides were ripped from my chest and dumped down the river. There was no body, as the monster took her away too quickly for me to follow. There were no leads, because at the time I had no idea what the creature was. There was only sorrow.
Now, Lily stood before me, alive. Shield one of her arms over her ribs and looked up at the sky. She let out a long breath. The warm air clouded, rose, and disappeared into the night sky. Lily squeezed her lips together and lowered her brows. Was she in physical pain? How had I not considered that sooner? I closed my eyes and focused on the bright ball of Lily's life force.
Don't do that, Lily said.
Do what?
You know what, she said. It's invasive. If you want to know how I am, simply ask.
Okay, I said. How are you?
Terrible.
I cringed and waited for her to volunteer more information. She did not. She didn't want me to check if she was in pain, so I was certain she didn't want me to try to heal her. There were so many questions I needed to ask, and I knew not all of them would be easy for either of us. Not sure I was ready to hear the answer, I whispered,
"What happened to you?" "I'm still processing it."
What was that supposed to mean? Since she didn't elaborate, I assumed that meant she wasn't ready to talk about her experience. Maybe she didn't know what had happened. Her cheeks were still pink, but dark circles settled under her eyes in the shadows, making her appear suddenly exhausted. I glanced around the nearly empty parking lot and found no sign of how Lily had arrived. The only cars parked here belonged to my coven.
"Want to go home?" I asked.
She breathed out an emphatic, "Yes." I turned around and found two sets of beady eyes staring through the window. Jennifer and Remedy had followed us, and practically had their noses pressed against the glass to watch us. Jennifer offered me an apologetic smile. I whipped my cane against the glass, startling Jennifer. Remedy scowled. "We're leaving," I said, hopefully loud enough for them to hear. Then I set the bottle of sherry I'd brought along for our little celebratory gathering by the front door of the restaurant and turned to go. Good thing I hadn't ridden my bicycle here, and instead Fernando had driven the four-wheeler. We stopped at the vehicle, and I noted Fernando wasn't here. I looked around a bit, but saw no sign of him. Lily looked from me to the four-wheeler to me again. Her mouth dropped open. She squeezed her eyes shut and shook her head.
"This is your vehicle?"
"It's Fernando's," I said.
"Well, at least there's a reason it appears to be made for a toddler. How do you fit in the seat to drive it?"
"Carefully, though it's preferable if he drives." I scanned the lot once more for any sign of where my blue companion had rolled off to. When I didn't see him there, I checked in the grass along the side of the building. Lily crossed her arms.
"I can't imagine the last 70 years have been kind to your arthritis. But somehow you bend yourself up and work the handles?"
"No, the last 70 years have not been pleasant. But the hurt in my heart at losing my daughter has been far worse than my physical ailments," I said. "Would you like to drive?" Lily opened her mouth and closed it once more. She squeezed her sides tighter, curling her shoulders in on herself.
Why'd I said that out loud?
Clearly I'd upset her, and I immediately regretted it. "Lily, I'm sorry." The bushes rustled. Fernando rolled out, apparently done with whatever he'd decided to do with himself for the last 10 minutes. He rolled straight at Lily, launched himself off the curb, and wrapped his long arms around her calf.
"Hello, Fernando," she said.
Her face softened, and fondness glittered in her cognac eyes. She reached down and patted him on top of the head and let her hand linger there. He responded with a series of gurgles that meant he had missed her. We both had.
"Looks like neither of us has to try to drive," Lily said.
"Thank the goddess for that." Lily and I climbed into the back of the wagon and sat side by side. Our arms bumped together, with no space to scoot apart. I set the box Brianna had given me in my lap and my purse on top of it and placed my cane by my side. Fernando settled into the front, started the engine, and set off. The wagon bumped along, jostling us back and forth. Lily adjusted and leaned her head on my shoulder. I'd never thought I'd have this again. The chance to hear her voice, to see her, to touch her. I wanted to pet her hair and pinch her cheeks. I wanted to hold on tight and never let go.
"I'm so tired, Mom," Lily whispered. Then she closed her eyes. I wrapped my arm around her, gave her a gentle squeeze, and promised her everything would be okay. There was no way to know if it was true, not without knowing what had happened. She shouldn't have been able to survive when the shachacha had broken her neck. I pushed away that unwanted thought.
"You're bonier than I remember," Lily said.
"Aging does that."
"You should eat more ice cream," Lily said. "It adds a nice layer of cushion."
"I prefer pie."
"I missed you."
"I missed you, too."
More than words could express.
A piece of me had withered when I thought I'd lost her forever. I'd lived like that for 70 years. And now I couldn't will the smile from my face even if I wanted to. A rush of energy washed over me. Lily gasped and pulled away. I didn't know what was happening. Something was very wrong. It was just like the universe to require a cost. Good things didn't happen without something bad happening, too. Equilibrium must be maintained.
"What is it?" I asked. But Lily seemed to be getting taller.
No, she wasn't getting taller. The wagon, Fernando, my bag, everything seemed to be getting bigger. It was me who was going wrong. I was shrinking.
Lily stared at me with wide eyes, then pulled a compact out of her skirt pocket. She lifted the mirror at me. "See for yourself." My reflection didn't make any sense. The image in the mirror couldn't be real. I lifted a hand and touched my cheek. The reflection did the same. I was a child. Chapter 3. My reflection took me back to the 10-year-old girl I had once been. The girl I hadn't thought about for the better part of a century. The memories were so long past they felt like they belonged to someone else. This youthful body belonged to someone else. My hands were small, the skin plush and opaque. I tested my fingers and was able to bend and flex without pain in my joints. How long had it been since that had happened? It was a pleasant surprise. I felt like I could do anything and not suffer for it.
"What happened?" Lily asked.
I turned to my daughter beside me, who was now half a foot taller than I was, and I smiled. "I don't know," I told her honestly. Her face squinched up in disbelief.
"Really?"
I said.
"You've lived, what, 100 years?
140. She made an O with her mouth and her brows shot up.
"You've mastered the magic to keep yourself alive, and you're still surprising yourself with new powers?"
In some way, my magic had always sustained me. I'd had no control over it, just as I seemed to have lost control now. Her lips thinned and turned down at the corners. She didn't believe me about my ignorance. I'd spent 40 years screwing up with Lily. I'd kept distance between us, hiding as much about the magical part of my life as I could, thinking it was the right thing to do, thinking that I could protect her. All that had done was push her to be reckless and ill-prepared for the supernatural dangers she would later face. When she died, I thought I'd missed my opportunity to make things right. I'd spent the time since focusing on my mistakes, wishing I could travel back in time and fix them. This was my second chance. "I'm not concealing the truth," I told her. "I'm not hiding anything, I promise. And for the record, I haven't consciously kept myself alive all this time. I had no concept of or control over self-healing until recently." She stared into my eyes, her gaze searching. She shrugged.
"Well, I guess that means we're both lost."
I guessed we were. I couldn't help but wonder if somehow my condition had transferred to Lily, if that was how she had escaped death. Magic wasn't supposed to be hereditary. Yet here we were, both still alive. Perhaps she was the exception to the rule. The slight tension in her shoulders eased as she leaned back against the wall of the wagon. She closed her eyes once more, relaxing in the rhythm of the bumpy road. When she opened them again, she said,
"Sample complete. Ready to continue?"